The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Networks.
To the Doctor's Inn with me, Dr. Dinothra Archer Cartwright. Sorry for the late start. We had a little bit of technical difficulties, it seems, but we're here now, and I want to thank everybody for tuning in to us tonight on Guardian Radio. We're on the Guardian Radio app, as well as our Facebook page, which is the Doctor's Inn with Dr. D on Facebook. So if you want to like and share that page, you can listen to us live on Facebook. Tonight's show is brought to you by, of course, Medical Concierge Services. All your medical health care needs. We take care of all your primary care needs, from family medicine, adult, child, elderly care. We do it all, immunizations, everything. So check us out. We're still open for NHI. So those of you who want to sign up, if you haven't signed up as yet, give us a call, 326-1521. Or you can WhatsApp us at 429-4880. And you just need your NIB number, your date of birth, and a contact information. So you can give us a call and sign up with us. We also take insurance, Galena, BAF, Atlantic Medical. And so we do that as well. So we take, we see a little bit of everything. Come on into the clinic. We personally, I like to specialize in preventative healthcare. So I want to keep you healthy. So that's why we do the educational show. That's why we talk about these things in the clinic. So come and see us at Medical Concierge Services on Collins Avenue in the Bahamas Heart Center building. And you can see us online, Facebook. We have a page, Medical Concierge Services, as well as Instagram, of course. And also here with us tonight, Mr. Victor Cartwright from Cartwright's Electric. Welcome back, Victor, and welcome to the show. How are you tonight?
Good day. Doing good.
Okay, awesome. You look like you got some rest. you've been working hard out there. Best electrician on the island, of course. So tell us a little bit about your company and what do you provide in terms of services for the Bahamian people?
Okay. My name is Victor Cartwright. My company is Cartwright's Electrical and Contracting Services. Very reliable contracting company. Been in the industry for 15 plus years. I'm licensed three-phase contractor while also offering general contracting services. So if you have a project that involves more than just electrical, I have all those services at my disposal as well.
Okay. Go on. I don't want to stop you. I can't get you to talk.
We specialize in also in solar systems, generator systems. We do sales, installation, maintenance, and repair of all those systems, and we also bring in LED lighting and any new technology in terms of power, we deal with it all.
And that includes solar, of course, as one of your specialties.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so can we go from the beginning of a project to the end? What all services do you do? Do you come in and do the audits? Because I know that's been very popular, the self-audits at homes. And can you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, we do it all from new construction to renovations, a lot of renovations as of late. Maintenance repair, also emergency calls 24/7. And with persons who are concerned about their power consumption, we do electrical audits to see how much your home is burning, how you can save, and all those ways that you can reduce your electrical consumption. We also do systems to improve your appliances from getting burned out from surges or lightning strikes by installing surge protection systems. And grounding testing as well. Also lighting protection, we also do. We do home automation. DC, AC power systems, you name it all. We do it. Serve Cat 5 cable run-ins, networking cable, we run it all. We do it all electrical.
You really do sound like you do it all. So you specialize in electrical and you also do contracting services. Tell us also about your new product of project management.
Yeah, we also, as part of doing all those field services, we do project management as well and property management in terms of if you need maintenance of your property, upkeep, in terms of painting, landscaping, or security. If whatever you need property-wise, we do it all.
The one-stop shop. Great. How do we find you? How do we contact you, Mr. Cartwright?
You could give me a call at 448-1198. The other number is 3767449. You can also contact me via WhatsApp. That number, send any questions or queries. I normally respond right away. Also, offering consulting services, I get asked a lot of questions. You also check the Facebook page, Cartwright's Electrical Contracting Services. And you can also send us the email or plans. Some people send plans away for the email at cartwright.elec@gmail.com.
Okay, awesome. And so if you didn't catch those numbers, you can reach out to Mr. Cartwright at 448-1198, 3767449. And that's Cartwright's Electric and Construction Services. And you can find him online as well. Thank you, Victor, for being here with us again. Any last few sentences you want to give the Bahamian people just to reflect on if they need you?
Well, we're one of we're very reliable. When we say we come on time. We're honest contractor out there.
Awesome. And I can definitely vouch for that. And Mr. Cartwright will give you a great deal. Quality work in the Bahamas is usually very, very hard to find. So if you're looking for quality work to be done, there you go, Cartwright's Electric. So thank you, Victor, for being a part of the show. So, you know, we talk about all things health, wellness, and things that pertain to the Bahamian society. And, you know, we're going to be a little social tonight, and usually I don't really dabble too much into politics. I try to stay far, far from it, but I'm just very, very concerned about the country and the place that we are right now. And I would have to say, as a young professional, a mother, a wife, you know, who plays different roles in my life and in society, I'm very concerned about where we are going and where we are leading to. And, you know, just as a country, what we're doing. And so, you know, I've been hearing so many different things. You know, there's a lot of different distractions in the country. There's a lot of different things that are going on. And, you know, one has to wonder, as a citizen of this nation, what does this really mean and where are we going? And so it's a very challenging topic tonight in terms of, because I want it to be an open line. I want people to participate. I want you to tell me how you're feeling in this moment as we move towards another cycle of governance, as we move towards another election season with all that's happening. You know, are we in a race to the bottom, especially when we look at leadership in this country? Are we racing to the bottom? It seems like over the last 20, 25 years, we've been steadily declining when it comes to leadership in this country and the direction that we're going. And, you know, whether it is positive for the average Bahamian or whether we are kind of just kind of sinking into something, I think we are on this precipice of change. But we can either fall or we can turn around and do so much more because there's so much potential. And you hear me talk about these things quite often. But I've really been stirred lately. And the fact, you know, I'm going to take a little kind of break to deal with family stuff. I really wanted to reflect on what I see are, you know, the direction that we're going, the problems that I'm seeing. And so I would say I want to go back to coming back to the Bahamas after being away for about 6 years. So as a family physician, as a doctor, as a specialist, you know, I was away. I did my undergrad in Canada. I went to UWI. And, came back and finished up my first medical degree here, my MBBS. And so coming back home, I would say that I was awakened to beauty, the potential of the Bahamas. It's something about leaving the country and coming back and just seeing things through a different lens that changes you. And so I really grew an appreciation for my homeland after leaving and coming back. It's very unusual because the circles that I was running in at the time was very far away from, I would say, the average Bahamian experience. And so I found that, you know, being around a lot of expats and different people that were just a completely different circle from, I guess, everyday Bahamian life, I also got to see different aspects of the Bahamas that I myself as a Bahamian would never really look at and see in that particular way. So it allowed me to be in a lot of arenas where at sometimes in this very Bahamas, I would be the only Bahamian in a particular situation. And so I got to see the Bahamas through the eyes of people that were coming into the country and people who were experiencing the country in a different way. And their experience is so different than I would say regular everyday Bahamians. And I feel that people come in and they do get to enjoy some of the best of the country. And we are just working and surviving and ticking away at just trying to live and overcome so much stuff that we don't really enjoy the country the way it is. We don't see the beauty. We don't see the potential. We don't see what we're missing. And I had that opportunity to see things so differently and through a different light and through different circumstances and through a different grouping of people. And so it gave me a deep appreciation for the Bahamas. And that's why nobody leaves. Some of my customers are expats and they don't want to leave. You know, we have people from all over the world that love the Bahamas and they don't want to leave. But we hear this constant cry from Bahamians of almost a sense of oppression, of difficulty, of just kind of having a chance to survive when we should thrive. And I know a lot of things have happened in the last few years, especially in terms of natural disasters and COVID. But I think those things have only opened our eyes and shed light on a lot of things that were holding us back as a people. Now, will we identify those things and realize that there is more out there for us? And so I think in terms of leadership, we're definitely on a race to the bottom. Our first leader who went into independent basically was Sir Lyndon. From him, we went to Ingram. And I feel like that brought out the Bahamians Need Not Apply era, where Bahamians began to feel and were relegated as second class citizens in their own country, where our approach was a lot different. And we respected people coming into the country a lot more than our own. So we went from an era of Bahamianization to an era of Bahamians Need Not Apply. I think that bridge definitely put us on a different path. Agree or disagree with me, but I think we definitely took a difference from that point. We had the Christie administration that basically went on to continue that in a different manner under the guise of the PLP government, which was once thought of as the majority rule government. But I think that became very, very different after the Ingram administration. And now we've moved on and we have a new leader and we have new challenges. And Bahamians seem to be struggling in a lot of ways. Before COVID, And now as we try to bring ourselves together, we're struggling because we forgot, we didn't take the warning signs. We didn't listen to those who were thinking amongst us that talked about diversifying the economy and changing and needing something different in foreign direct investment. We thought that we could make it through doing what we had always been doing. But here we are on the precipice of change, where we will either fail or we will find a new vision for ourselves. There were a couple of disturbing comments I just heard recently that I think we all need to think about and we all need to discuss. And like I said, it is basically an open show tonight. I wanted to stay away from COVID so much, but you know, you can ask about COVID. We know the vaccines are out there and you know, we're still expecting to get some here. And so we can always talk about those types of things. And if you have any medical questions, you know, we're always up. Our phone lines tonight, 323-623-2325-4316-54259. Are we in a race to the bottom when it comes to leadership? I compare our situation to a cycle of abuse, one that has affected the Bahamian psyche for the past 30, 40 years. We have been struggling to find the type of leadership that will take us beyond the idea of independence into a real independent state. We have been constantly moving back and forth between two major styles of leadership that have not led us beyond where we were. And in fact, I think we have gone backwards. And why do I call this a cycle of abuse? Because there is almost a cycle of doing the same thing over and over again, just changing the color of the shirt, just changing around a few of the members. But still, it seems like the Bahamian people get the least out of the deal. And so we have to confront that and wonder, why do we continue to do first the same thing over and over? That's just madness. And why is it that we don't see another way out? As a group, we don't see another way out. And so leadership in this country has become a cycle of abuse on the Bahamian psyche. And to say all of that, I look at some of the recent comments by our leadership today. We have comments from Prime Minister stating to focus on the poor, you know, in the next chapter of winning the election. And we have similar tones in 2019 of focusing on the poor. I'm going to go into an article in which he talks about focusing on the poor. And we have to wonder why we continue to talk about the things that we should be doing, but we don't seem to be able to get them done. So the PM said yesterday that the government is focused, this was in 2019, December 19th, on protecting the poor and the marginalized. He responded to questions over the data that revealed the cost of living in the country had increased yet again over the past year. He said the wealthy can survive on their own. In our policies to do everything we possibly can to protect the poor and the marginalized. He said on the sidelines of the Bahamas Hotel and Tourism Association annual general meeting at the Atlantis Resort in Paradise Island. We feel that the wealthy and rich individuals, regardless of the outcome, they would be able to survive and protect themselves. We will still need them to help generate jobs and employment, but we would do all we can to protect the grouping that needs protection. And that is the poor and marginalized. So regardless of what happened, policies will be there to ensure their protection. Of According to the data from the Department of Statistics, Bahamians are paying more for basic goods and services than they have for over the past 4 years. Revealed at that time that the Consumer Price Index, the CPI, rose to 108.81 in September of that year. This is 2019. Inflation rose at its fastest pace in March and in April this year by 4%, settling at 1.8% in July at the start of the new fiscal year, which is stayed in September. The CPI increase comes despite a number of tax breaks the government implemented in the 2019 and 2020 budget. The areas that had highest spikes were healthcare, transport, furniture, and wholesale equipment, restaurants, hotels, alcoholic beverages, tobacco, and narcotics. Now we see in there, one of the highest spikes was healthcare. The CPI index September 2018 was 121.15, whereas it stood at 134.95 in September of this year. The CPI index for transport rose from 102.46 in September to 114.35 in September of this year. Alcoholic beverages, tobacco, and narcotics also showed a similar spike. That was fun. The Minnesota administration has faced significant backlash over the past several weeks after announcing an additional fee from Bahamas Power and Light consumers due to rate reduction bond. The rate reduction bill was passed, and they were talking about bringing down that bill at that point in time. And the opposition had raised concern over the disproportionate impact that a flat fee increase on bills would have on the poor and those who consume electricity. So right in that very sense of looking out for the marginalized and the poor, they talked about a household increase of 20 to 30%. So why is there such a disconnect between what our leadership says and what do they do? And how, as Bahamians, do we discern, in a sense, what's going to be good for us? Because obviously there is a mismatch in the things that we want, the things that we need, and the things that are actually happening in the country. The second point that was made this week was land for Bahamians of Haitian descent. And I am not xenophobic or anything. I have all respects for anyone who comes into the country legally, but in reference to land that was being given out in Carmichael. And we know that Bahamians have been crying out for land, especially Crown land, for quite some time. And we've heard a lot of excuses of why Crown land hasn't been given. I even applied for some for a multidisciplinary project. And if you get anything back from Prime Minister's office or lands and survey and those guys, you know, you're lucky. It's usually nothing. And so a lot of land's being given out in the last few months, mostly in Carmichael. And there are some new pieces that are going up, supposed to be professional pieces of land. And so from what I saw, most of those pieces in Carmichael have already been distributed, or they've decided who were going to give it. They were oversubscribed. And this comment came out specific talking about how Bahamians of Haitian descent deserve land. And I found that was a very unusual point to make from a leader's point of view, because if you're Bahamian, you're Bahamian. Correct? Although I would disagree with how Section 7 or Chapter 7 of the Constitution is interpreted. If you're Bahamian, you're Bahamian. So to make such a distinguishing point, I found it very, very unusual. Since Bahamians have been asking for land for such a long time, why make such a declaration in terms of who is deserving and who is not? And so that was a very curious thing. And I don't know if that is to set us up for the idea that people are going to be given land over other people, but it's kind of disturbing that you're categorizing Bahamians based on those particular things. Or if you have a preference for persons for particular reasons. And so this should be, if it was something based on need, then that need should be spelt out in terms of criteria, which is a problem with our governance today. Where is the transparency and where is the clarity when dealing in land that belongs to everybody? And we're going to go into a little bit about this whole idea of good governance, how that plays into our democracy, and what makes governance both good and bad. I think those things are important if we are to change the way that we think about leadership. What is it that we really need? And so if we look specifically at Chapter 7 in the Bahamas Constitution, it speaks to who is a citizen of the Bahamas, 6, 7, around there, right? Starting from 6. So every person born in the Bahamas after the 9th of July, 1973, shall become a citizen of the Bahamas at the date of his birth. And if at any date, either the parent is a citizen of the Bahamas, right? So you're a Bahamian at birth, you're born here, you have a Bahamian parent. 7, which is tends to be the controversial one, a person born in the Bahamas after the 9th of July, 1973, neither of whose parents is a citizen of the Bahamas shall be entitled upon making application on the attaining 18 years or within 12 months thereafter in such manner as be prescribed to be registered a citizen of the Bahamas. So what does that really mean? The way that I interpret that, first of all, holding into the fact that the Constitution would not uphold anything illegal, is that all circumstances surrounding your citizenship should be involved in legality. I don't see the framers of the Constitution creating a loophole for illegality. Provided that he is a citizen of some other country than the Bahamas, he shall not be entitled to be registered as a citizen of the Bahamas under the article unless he renounces his citizenship of the other country, takes the oath of allegiance, and registers such declaration of his intentions concerning residence as may be prescribed. And so this rules out a lot of your dual citizenship. So if you don't renounce, which a lot of people do not, then you can't be considered a citizen of the Bahamas. Particular attention is to the sentence which speaks to in such manner as may be prescribed. And this is where our laws come in. So the debate that we cannot do anything but misinterpret Section 7 of the Constitution is incorrect. Because we can prescribe whatever we want to the idea of citizenship through laws. And so if we wanted to prescribe a formality that incorporated legality, then we could have things in place to ensure that every person that applies to citizenship that is grounded in all legal aspects of the law. And so I just thought that was kind of a disturbing thing to kind of point out. And I really don't know what that means. The third thing was also from the prime minister, where he said he dreamed of a woman being prime minister one day. That's really amazing and wonderful. And I think that a woman, as long as she's qualified, will make a great prime minister because we bring something different to the table, a different way of looking at things, a different way at analyzing things. And we've seen that have been doing very well, especially during times of crisis. because I think that some of that is built into to women when the going gets tough, you know? We are survivors. And so that is interesting. However, like I said, there's always a disconnect because this has been a government with very few women. This most recent only female in cabinet has recently resigned. And it just goes against what we're seeing in action. And so we have to start looking at the actions of our leaders. And does it match what they're doing? This is a very kind of important aspect, petty politics. Have we been missing the real issues in the Bahamas? And so I think governance is a big part of that. And why should we care about that? Because it affects every aspect of our lives. As a physician, watching the cost of healthcare increase, watching people who have lost their jobs, losing their insurance. You know, I see the struggle daily and I deal with a lot of different persons and how they deal with it. And so I think we've played on the Bahamian psyche in terms of what leadership can and can't be. I think we've beaten our expectations so low that we don't know what good leadership should look like. It's already started. It's already started with all the political views. And so we wonder why some of the people amongst us who we would love to be involved in politics do not get involved in politics. Because it's not a pretty game. And for those of us with integrity who want to see the best for the Bahamas, is there really a place for people who really care? And is that what you really want as Bahamians? So we're going to talk a little bit again tonight about governance, good and bad, and how do we see those things, the signs and the symptoms of good governance in our country. So we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back on the Doctor's In with me, Dr. D. So we'll be back in a moment. Thank you.
Can you believe this?
We are now the patrol queens of the neighborhood.
We now large and in charge. So we need to check out what's going on in everybody's yard. What about that gun that we know that Junior and his homeboys just ran out? Can we report that too?
Of course we can.
But we could be in deep trouble if they find out.
We need to report what we see, Beulah. When you call Crime Stoppers, they just answer your call and
we can report everything. Guns, where they hiding the drugs, who shoot who part of which gang, or who disturbing the peace with the loud music and the motorcycles.
Then our neighborhood will be the best in the Bahamas and everybody gonna want to come live here. And then our house price will go up, gal.
So what we waiting on? What's the number?
If you see something, say something. Let us all pitch in and stop the crime before it's your time. Call 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands. Or text us through the Crack Crime Bahamas app. Stop the crime before it's your time.
The new Guardian Radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio shows and live video stream select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android. All new and improved Guardian Radio app.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
to the Doctors In with me, Dr. D. Archer. We're not talking too much medicine tonight. We're talking a little bit about our social climate, our governance, good, bad, and what's going on in the country. I just want to read one more article on what's kind of going on, things that we kind of missed, things that we need to think about that I think have. And this was another article I saw about co-prime minister, and I want to know what you guys think about it. If you have thoughts on it, of course, you can join us, 323-6232. We're just talking about a bunch of different issues affecting us in the country as we move forward, as we look for change. What should we be thinking about in terms of it, and how do we get to a good governance that we're looking for? So 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. And so this article speaks of co-prime ministers, the deputy prime minister to run government whilst prime minister focuses on youth empowerment. Prime Minister Dr. Hubert Minnis said yesterday that the Free National Movement is, that if the Free National Movement is successful in being re-elected to office, he and the deputy prime minister, Desmond Bannister, has never been done in the Bahamas, split the leadership of the government. The prime minister made the statement while leading the mid-year budget debate in Parliament. The deputy prime minister and I have a commitment. I said to him that, listen, how government is ran today, we have to look at it differently. Never done before. And what I've said to him is, in our next term, is I want to concentrate on the poor. I want to concentrate on land, giving out to Bahamians to ensure everyone has an opportunity for land and home. Hopefully, I don't know, I guess these were not things that were important this time. And I want to concentrate on Bahamian ownership. There was a round of banging on the table from the governing side. I want to confine myself as PM in the next term. And he patted Bannister on the shoulder. We'll run the rest of the government. Let me confine myself to that. So we're going to split. It has never been done before, but it will be more effective, especially when you have great relationship. Bannister has not yet been ratified. The Prime Minister underscored that East Grand Bahama MP Peter Turnquest was very good as a Deputy Prime Minister and is good. When he speaks, you're going to see, Minnis said. I think he has something for y'all. Mr. Speaker, it was just like when I said years ago that a prime minister, as prime minister, I will accept no ministry. I was lambasted left, right, and center. What a dumb idea is that? This and that. They have never heard it. Now it is the best thing that happened. I am certain every prime minister moving forward will not have a minister because I look forward to seeing a female prime minister. I look forward to seeing a female. As he paused to reflect on the women who helped to shape him, Minnis said that he believes in equality and his greatest dream is to one day see a female prime minister in the Bahamas. He said his early childhood career and adult life were successful because of women. While in opposition, former Long Island MP Loretta Butler-Turner challenged him twice for leadership of the FNM without success. Turner, the only female FNM MP following the party's defeat in 2012, went on to become the first female leader in the opposition after she and six others. So it goes on into that part. And then it says the only woman in the Minnis administration and cabinet is Lanisha Rule, who resigned as Minister of Youth, Sports, and Culture last week. The female governing MPs also include Shaunal Ferguson, Bakisha Parker Edgecombe, and Miriam Emanuel. So a team with very few women dreaming of a female prime minister. Very, very interesting thoughts there. And so it's interesting to see the reality and the disconnect of our leaders. And how do we take that moving forward? How do we make better decisions on who leads us? So I think it's important to look at what makes good governance, what makes...
Hello?
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 We have a caller on the line. Caller, go ahead.
Hi, Doc. How are you tonight?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
All right. On a very interesting topic, and you're asking about the leadership of the country and how we choose a leader who's going to take us to where we need to be as a country. And the truth be told, there's a passage of scripture that says you can't put new wine into old wineskin. And we always associate that with some sort of a more of a spiritual term, but it's a principle, right? So how is it that we want great change, we want this great leadership to take place in our country with government, when the truth be told that the system in which we use to try make these changes is the very same system that enslaved us as a people, but we go through the same system to try and liberate us? That's not going to work. And I guarantee you, any party or any group try to go forth and take leadership of this country through the means that is that's already there now will not win. They will not win because it's a system that was not designed for them to win. It's party politics, as always. And until we understand that the people is the government and the government is the people, and the only true liberation we're going to get is when the people acknowledge the fact that they are the ones with the power to truly make the change and stop utilizing this system that has been keeping us down and downtrodden for so long. And we continually go back to it for answers and not giving us the answers we're looking for. I mean, it is crazy. I mean, it's my 5 cents, is what I see. Until we understand that, one, we need to come into our true identity, get rid of this governmental system. And three, we need to practice group self-preservation. Those are the things that we need to do as a country moving forward. Thank you for your time.
Before you go, caller, because you made very good points, and I definitely believe in, new wine and old skin doesn't work. How do we achieve that, knowing that to get in that position, you have to go through this political, I guess, environment?
Well, here's the first thing that needs to happen. When we talk about how is it going to happen, where's the first order of governance in any country within any people? Isn't it the home?
Definitely.
Yeah. So what is the conditions of our homes today, especially in the Black community?
I think it's in a really bad place. I mean, we don't have a really strong family structure. I mean, I came out of a single mother's home, but quite a different single mother's home because my mother had me later after going to college and doing other things. But most of our young people are growing up in single mother homes without the structure of a kind of a nuclear family in an environment where everybody is kind of floundering in a sense.
Exactly. And so now let's look at the state of affairs with our, especially with the inner city. I'm going to start there because the state of affairs there is, we talk about it, but when you get into some of these individuals' lives, you're blown away for the level of trauma that has already been inflicted upon them. And then these are the very same people moving forward with their lives, trying to do things, dealing with the same issues of the country today. Homestead is not what it needs to be. These are the people that, when you see these individuals that stand before Parliament, the sad reality is that they are a reflection of the people. That's who they are. So when we look at them and say, oh, you're nothing but a crook, you're this, you're that, you're not doing the best interest of the people, of course they're not going to do what's in the best interest of you. Because as far as they're concerned, you're really not, you being of interest is really not what it's about. It's all about what benefits them. So until we understand that the government starts at home, the government is the people, and we as the people, we need is us who have to rise up and do what it needs to move this country forward. If we keep, let me put it this way real quick, because I know you're on the clock, right? Okay, when we vote, do we understand what is actually taking place? First of all, there's no for us to vote. However, they've made legislation that we can vote. It's in the Constitution. Now, Two, in terms of voting, we are transferring our energies, okay? We're giving our energies up to someone who's going to then, say, represent us. So we become powerless because we give them our power. And then with our power, they go and do as they see fit. And then we get upset. Isn't that true? Isn't that what we do?
Representative government is supposed to represent the will of the people. Where we have a disconnect is that once people have the power, they seem to forget who they're representing.
Exactly.
And I think it has a lot to do with the way that we are choosing leaders. And it goes back to what you say. I agree with you, caller. The change has to start with us. Because, in politics, I don't think that the society reflects what good governance would look like. And therefore, I don't think they would appreciate it. I think that we are picking people that reflects the mass of our society and how they think and how they go about doing things.
Yes.
And that's why we're not getting the results that we really want.
No.
Because there has to be a change from the individual standpoint as well.
Yes. And this whole party politics and picking for these individuals who mean us no good, that has to stop. We really need to get up that bandwagon and get up. So for me personally, with this next election, I'm personally not going to vote. I'm not going to give up my power, my energies, and my time to an individual who's only going to do the same thing they've been doing every 5 years.
Would you vote independent? Because I vote.
I've been voting independent from the time I've been voting. I never vote for a party. I always vote on the individual, and I look at what they're capable of doing and what they're willing to do. And I that's the way I've been voting. I've never voted for anybody.
Well, thank you, Carl. You made some really good points. And I think, that's the thing. We need more people thinking on that level of what it means to transfer your power during an election. And that's
exactly, what we're doing. We're transferring our energies every day, all day. And they love it at election time because that's the biggest transfer of power that they get to rule over us.
Thank you very much. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah, very, very good. The caller hit a lot of important points. It does start with us. And it is reflecting on us where our values, where our thought processes are and what engages. We are making bad choices. And so what is bad governance in the relationship of all this? So is the relationship between those who govern and those who are governed as a consequence of decision-making? This unfavorable relationship is created as a consequence of external factors or decisions such as violations of central or acceptable norms, such as those of liberal democracy and bad economic policy. Bad governance collectively encompasses governance in government and corporate settings. It is the opposite of good governance. Bad governance addresses governance in a government setting, but bad governance and bad government are different concepts. Bad governance encompasses a variety of situations from corruption, deceit, to passing of unfair policy. From this, it can be noted that different manifestations can vary in severity and potential impact in their prospective settings, right? So the World Bank defines bad governance as a country which holds figures of any or all of the indicators less than or close to 2.5. So voice and accountability, political stability and absence of violence, government effectiveness, regulatory quality, rule of law, control of corruption. So how does this impact us? This impacts and consequences of bad governance are widespread and do not only affect settings in which they occur. You have poor economic growth, this corruption, and these are usually the tenets of bad governance. Bad governance heavily impacts per capita growth of the country. In some of African countries and developing countries that are stagnant because of bad governance. The economic growth of a country is significantly impacted when exposed to indicators of bad governance, but different indicators influence the degree of the impact. A lack of regulatory quality, government ineffectiveness, and a lack of control of corruption has been linked to poor economic growth. Corruption not only is a cause of, but can also occur as a consequence of bad governance. There's a distinct link suggested that higher levels of governance and a better environment to conduct business are impacted by the presence of corruption within an economy. This link suggests that as levels of governance in an economy due to bad governance, the levels of perceived corruption will rise. So our issues, are they just the way that we choose the government reflects our own selves, according to the caller? And he's saying that we have to look within and decide if we want better. And I think those were really, really important points that he made about what is going on and what we're seeing. Because we are screaming for one thing, but there seems to be a complete disconnect of what that is and what we're getting in reality. So we have to look within. I think there's two approaches to that. Yes, it has to come from the individuals and the people in community, but good governance can also start to turn some of those things around because nobody has power like the government to do the things that will change a nation. Bad or good, China has decided where they're going. And if you visit China, the tenets of what they want out of their people, it's everywhere. I'm not saying that the way that they do that is great, but they've charted a course for themselves. We have another caller. Caller, you on the air?
Yeah, good night. How you doing, Dr. D?
Good night. I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, you know, it's always a pleasure to listen to you. You know, I agree with you with the female leadership, right? Hello?
Yes.
You see the Yamal when I suggest.
I was going with what the Prime Minister said, but he has very few women, and now he has no women in his cabinet. So I was really interested to hear him say something like that.
Yeah, I showed some interest in, I always like Loretta Butler Turner and Janet Bostwick Doers. But not only that, you know, in my reading and my travel and my mental travels and reading, I've come across a lot of very intelligent females. I'm very impressed with Dolores Cahill, Jesse Jones, Vandita Shiva. These people, these ladies speak and the audacity and the fearlessness what they have. You gotta know these people. You have to know these people. These are super women. But anyhow, Dr. D, I kind of get vexed when you mention China, right?
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, Brayman was correct all the while, and the information that me and C. Allen had disclosed on Ms. Malcolm's show from last year, right? All that information is correct because it's a documentary on 60 Minutes. Now, Dr. D, I'm vexed, you know, at the level, listen to me, global governance, local governance, to me, right, is becoming very frightening and totalitarian. It's visible, right? It's visible, mm-hmm. Dr. D.
Yes.
All right? Now, Dr. Gilbert Morris is on the other night. I listened to him for about 15 minutes, 20 minutes, but I'm sorry I didn't even record the whole show, but, you know, but I wanted to mention this, the Pfizer geopolitical tactics that they're using in the third world subregions, all right? You saw the video on Gravitas, right? Hello?
Which one?
The video on Gravitas about Pfizer's geopolitical strategy with South America and some African countries as far as asking them for military bases and sovereign assets, in exchange for vaccines, and then also legalities concerning the liabilities of the vaccines, and it's all there. I don't want to dwell on that too much, but this just should open up the sheep demise. What is frightening for me is that I guess the educational system, but you know, people out there who hear me speak, and they say, a lot of people know what I'm saying, you know. But I'm saying is, I'm afraid that the educational system is fearless because the sheep seems to not have their own individual minds. Everybody's at the general consensus about the pseudoscience, like everything is so correct, and they're not questioning. You give people and their objective views, right? Wow, their objective views, and people still are not. The compressor came on, and people are still not picking up on what's going on. It's dangerous when respective leaders blindly follow science when there was no consensus, especially coming from the WHO, right? Now, you're looking at the whole chronology, this farce of an outbreak at the Wuhan Institute of Technology, where they were really trying to gain a function research because the United States had a moratorium on it. And Dr. Fauci was in charge of this entity that outsourced this to the Wuhan lab, the Wuhan Institute of Technology. They noticed. So even as the lady disclosed the devices that they were working on, this information appeared in Nature Medicine. It appeared in the Lancet, and so it was obvious that they didn't weigh the possible risk of a bio lab leak. All right, and this is on 60 Minutes now from a high level guy from the medical intelligence branch. That's similar to the CIA, but it's a medical intelligence branch, right? No country. This is, you see, Australia made a statement saying they wanted an independent.
Pull it all together, caller.
Yeah, right. Australia made a statement saying they wanted an independent investigative team, different from the WHO, to go to the Wuhan Institute of Technology of Virology, right? And this is what caused the problem with China and Australia. This is why Donald Trump took away the funding from the WHO, and this is why. See, you know, it's sickening to me that we're not following the science. We're not going to get anywhere, and we're not picking up on everybody. Every geopolitical leader, Palmer spoke the other day, said everybody's following the same mandate, the same protocol. Nobody's deviating, right? When you read the great research,
you have to. I would say to you that, you know, we've been pushing globally for kind of a global agenda. You know, globalization had become a very big talking point. I think it's gone a little bit undercover, but I think we're seeing the mandates of a globalization come out in something just the way that so many countries reacted to COVID in one particular way. There were very few countries that kind of did their own thing, and, you know, they were kind of ridiculed, but countries that kind of did their own thing, they ended up either in the middle or doing a lot better than the countries that just followed the script. And so what does that tell us? That if we do not think about decisions within the context of our people and what's happening for us, that we will just be another follower in this global kind of
all right,
Dr. T, singular way.
Just look at the transnational companies and the collapse of economies and companies, right? And the whole repercussions of humanity, right? Central banks will try their best with the stimulus and waking the governments with the bonds and all of this, et cetera. I didn't want to get into it. But when you look at
it. Let's pull it back to governance in our country and how we can move to a different path. How do you see us choosing differently?
Well, you know, to me, I'm kind of hopeless, all because of my knowledge that's in my head. It's really a new world order. What I was trying to tell you is this situation you see now was written in the book, The First Global Revolution. That was written from the 80s by Bertrand Snyder and Alexander King by the Club of Rome. You know, the thing is, if you're not going to listen to people, them, right? See, I'm a local guy. That's off of my bicycle, you know. I know it's high society for looting poison, you know. My name is the truth, you know, because what happens is the truth is losing and the lies are becoming very, very prevalent. When I ride downtown, I'm a Bohemian, Dr. D. I'm confounded. When I ride downtown the other day, right? I see more police than tourists and people. So that is, to me, that's a police state. I saw the other day the Defense Force still hire 56 people. You really think that's necessary? How could the government survive like this? These people with the government jobs, they have nothing much to do, you know. Don't mind them. The police don't really have nothing much to do now but ride up in the dawn and try and suck up the rest of the wealth from the majority of the sheep that's left. People can't see what's going on. This is on a global scale. They have to feed themselves so they have to finish suck out the remaining wealth. This is all a blueprint for tyranny. Alex Jones spoke about this from 1999, but yet still like you say, Dr. D, critical thinking is out the door. All right, I'm telling you, with all the armamentario that the medical community has, they keep pushing this vaccine narrative. Now, I have read the vaccines and all that, right? If I have been in genetics for so long, there's no way I could take the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine because I have questions asked about the transferring, creating the anticodons with the codons from the ribosomes and the mRNA that they inject into me. Now, I look at Johnson & Johnson, and they know why Johnson & Johnson has a less percentage because Johnson & Johnson picks on a wider study with more variables, all right? You know something, Dr. D, I just don't really need nobody to agree with me, you know. But what I'm saying is when you look at the geopolitical tactics being used by Pfizer and you put together the Cassius paradigm and the climate change paradigm And they're actually re-engineering humanity and the way they want us to do. This is why big oil, this is why companies conquered the world, because they could set up global governments via the United Nations and the Council on Foreign Relations and drive global policies. But yet still, you have Satan talk host, show hosts, lost and I don't know what in their brain. You're saying nobody's controlling governing, geopolitical governance on a global scale. I must be that stupid. This is what makes me sick. I don't care if people don't listen or don't do nothing. I just want to get the truth out there. And we'll all pay the price. I don't care how they put it. This construct that's being created is like we have never seen before. And I don't even think our government even know what to do. I didn't believe any of them even read the Great Reset yet. But as far as I'm concerned, we need to invest in the human capital. That's what we need to do, because this is what really shows. This is what this pandemic is bringing out now. We haven't invested in the human capital in various communities, and it's paying off drastically, because we must deviate and innovate, and the government must analyze what it's doing instead of following, like, waiting on a vaccine, and then what? What's going to happen after the vaccination? The economy still will be in hibernation for a certain period of time, because you're looking at how long it's going to take for people to trust traveling again. You're not looking at the robocalypse or the implementation of artificial intelligence as far as taking away jobs from humans. All right, these programs on science, a sci-fi program with the artificial intelligence.
Thank you.
But nanotechnology is more dangerous than anything else. Have a good night.
Thank you, caller. Hey, you wrapped a lot of things in there. I always kind of love your passion, though. But I think kind of the ending point of that is, you know, kind of we need the type of government, we need the type of governance and leadership that will take into context our individual situation, that will work on behalf of the Bahamian people to move towards the goals of no deprivation, which we have in our own constitution. And so until we are thinking along those terms, until we've elevated our mind to pick the type of people that are going to make that happen, we will continue to have the type of governance that we do have. And so I just want to highlight what good governance actually looks like. And so we can start making kind of that paradigm shift to where we should be and which we should be looking at. And good governance is an approach to government as committed to creating a system founded in justice and peace that protects individuals' human rights and civil liberties. According to the United Nations, good governance is measured by 8 factors of participation: rule of law, transparency, responsiveness, consensus-oriented, equity and inclusiveness, effectiveness and efficiency and accountability. In terms of participation, it requires that all groups, particularly those most vulnerable, have direct and representative access to the systems of government. This manifests as a strong civil society and citizens with the freedom of association and expression. We've seen that not only has our civil society at times are relegated to pawns of our leadership, but also don't have the kind of power that I think they wield maybe in places like the United States. Personally, our group, I put our nonprofit together, and we're still waiting from the registrar's office to get that sorted out. So I have a very strong feeling on how civil society and being a good citizen interacts with good governance. We have another caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, good evening, Dr. D.
Good evening. Welcome to the show.
Good. You start off talking about leadership and the deficit in leadership in our country. It's really, you really point out the fact that we are left a warning for leadership in our country. And for decades, you know, we had some level of good leadership. But, the electrician Cartwright, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know him well, and you endorsed his work. But would you fly to United States with him on Bahamas there as a pilot?
I hear what you're saying, sir.
Absolutely. People might be good people, but you know, leadership is something that you either practiced, studied, and practiced over years. We continue, over the years and decades, we keep on getting the same people, have no experience, not that they can't learn, and many of them have learned, but we've gotten people in leadership in our country, and we expect something that they don't have from them. We have to understand what we get what we vote for. You ever seen dilly on an apple tree or apple on a mango tree? Can't happen.
No, sir. I've seen some island people splice some different citrus on one tree. I've seen that.
Yeah, but dilly don't grow on mango tree.
No.
No, we expect things that is not there. It's not there. Zero from zero leaves zero. You can't get a full bucket of water from a half a bucket.
But here we are pulling these guys that are so-called leaders, right? Because a lot of our eventual politicians, they're coming out of, let's say, leadership roles, unions and all these different, or they've been in politics for a while. But we seem to be picking the same types of persons. Where are we going wrong as a group? It seems like people are missing the details. Because I think it's more than just having experience in leadership. I think it has a lot to do with integrity and character and what we as a people believe a leader should be.
Right. But leadership should be the best interest of the people who put them there. Is that correct?
Yes, but we seem to be picking people who we think have our interests at heart. I'm not saying me personally, because I think the last few years I've kind of voted against the grain, but Bahamians tend to be just picking the same type of or grouping of people, just newer faces. I find that the major parties have a prototype that they create and they send out to you. You know, I call it a paper candidate. They look good enough on paper, but then they don't really go out there and do what the people need them to do. They're loyal to the parties or loyal to some other agenda. We don't seem to be learning from the mistakes that we make. So how do we choose a good leader today? And why aren't we waking up to that?
Well, like 67, when we had the other party in, when the government took over, I think he was pretty young, wasn't he?
He had a
passion for change. Unless you have a passion for change and for the people, and after a while, a decade and a half maybe, there's something went wrong, and then of course you see the dissident aid left because they said, hey, this is not what we signed up for. I think we are at that point again in our history where none of these parties that you say one, two, three strikes and you're out. That's where we are now. Many of these parties may not have the answers for us moving ahead. We may need to return to 67 and find someone who has the will, maybe independence, who have the will and the passion like Mr. Pinlan and Milo Butler and Bain would have. And you don't see that in your leaders now. That tells you that it's not there. You can't get something out of nothing.
What I want to say to just counter what you said in the beginning, our leaders who had the least experience actually did better for us because they came in with the passion and desire for change. And it wasn't until they had been in the system for quite some time did we start seeing corruption and these other problems popping up. I did an interview with Mr. Roker a few years ago, and he said the issue that the PLP had was they had a plan to win the government,
right,
but not a plan to govern.
And that bears true because, they did well for three terms, I believe, and then it went down. But, you can tell the quality of our leaders based on look at the inner cities. Do you think over the years, if we had leadership who've been working on our inner cities, you think we've gotten worse. The inner cities has come over the hill. The inner cities come in the, has gone in the east, west, north, and south. The inner cities everywhere now. We have degradation everywhere. I mean, and then people are just accepting that. You can't accept that. That's our major issue. And that's why we have so much crime in our society. It's because people don't see hope. Many people have given up. The family island have not grown. You need people who have passion for change, not just people who hold in the fort. You know, anybody could sit in the kitchen, you know, that don't mean you could cook. You know? So, you know, we've been having the wrong pilots. We've been having Mr. Cartwright driving us to Miami with no pilot license, no experience. And we expect Mr. Cartwright to land safe. It's not gonna happen. So there we are, and in our society right now, in a 21-by-7 island, Dr. Archer, we have out of 400,000 people, we have over 250,000 people in one 21-by-7, with all these land and stuff in the Family Islands. That tells you something is wrong.
Huh? It shows you there's no strategic planning. I mean, I would say that concepts are out there and we're not putting the people in place who care. Because if you read the manifesto done by, I think, John Boswick quite a few years ago, he talks about strategic planning for each individual island and looking at the context of what makes those islands special and developing them because of that. And I really liked that concept because now as you develop these islands and, you know, you do it in an eco-based system because of how important the Bahamas is as an ecosystem. And you basically create economies within these different islands, giving people reasons to move to these places.
You meant to move back.
And to move because you have generations of persons like myself. My dad's family would have come in from Abaco, you know, he was born here and everything like that. And so I am Nasubian in a sense, or New Providence is where I was born. My mother was born. So we have quite a few of us who have just been here. And then you have my mom's side where her family came all the way from Rum Key. And so you there's like 40 people in Rum Key, right? In Abaco, you know, there's a lot of people, but we also have a lot of migrants there and a lot of expats there. And then you have like some Bahamians who are there, but because that was an area that was thriving on its own. But you have some of these other islands that have great potential. And most Bahamians have never even been to most of these islands.
Right.
They have no reason to go.
Well, you know, I heard what you say. You said there is not a plan. There is a plan to keep people in New Providence so that we can take care of the people who have. And so we can stay poor. Didn't you know? That is.
Plan. So their plan doesn't line up with what we need to move the country forward as a whole.
Absolutely.
Because to me, if your strategic plan was based on the people, Bahamians should be thriving and those coming in should be really, not to say serving us, but a mixture of those who would serve us and those who would enjoy in what we have created. Not us completely being in this position of servitude and hustling and trying to survive, you know, every day. Whereas, like I told the story before, when I came back and I was hanging out with some expats and different people, they were living a pretty good life here in the Bahamas.
Well,
you know,
they all live better than Bahamians. And let me tell you, they get treated better than us when they come to work, when they come to invest, when they come to you know, they get land for free. We can't get land, like you mentioned. People in their grave for decades waiting for their land to be granted to them. You heard that? They applied for land for decades. They're in their grave, rotten, waiting for land because somebody decided, hey, you're not a part of my party or you're not a part of the clique, even though I'm with you. you're not gonna, we're not gonna do it for you. And that kind, and you see, that's the kind that sometimes leaders we have in certain incidents. Take for instance again the Removal Property Act that was bordered with, the Quiet an Act that the Privy Council told our government to get rid of it because it's a Tiefen Act. It was in the papers many years ago. Land reform for Crown land and all this stuff that needs to be family island development, so that people can return back. Everywhere you go in our city, the islands are filthy.
I just did a post on that, on how dirty this place is and how
it's filthy.
Where are these people
filthy
coming from?
And everybody accepts it.
I don't understand.
It's filthy, and you expect crime to get better? I tell them crime is not an issue. Our issue is me and you. We have the issue. Crime is not our issue. Children do what they see, what they're allowed to do in our society. Crime is not we don't have a crime problem. We have a social health problem in the home. You mentioned it earlier, single mothers, and some single mothers did well, very well in our society. And raised great
children. I think to counter that, we have to remember that every single mother, there's a father that's not in the home.
Right,
in the United States, they found that when those numbers reversed, where they had 75% of nuclear families where there was a father and a mother, and that reversed after welfare, where there was about 75% of single mothers where the man had disappeared, that the social and economic situation of that community just fell apart.
So,
if you look at pre-1960s, the black community in America actually had about 70 to 80% of the homes were mother and father.
Right?
So after the drug and welfare state moved in.
Yes, absolutely.
Those numbers reversed.
Right.
And their society was on a decline since.
Well, let me say this now, I believe that we've moved moral principle from our society. We've put in things, status, and money, and we've left God out of the picture, and we run after things, status, and money, and our country is in tailspin at this moment, and until we return to the principles of God and have leaders who who focus and have some godly principle. In fact, you can see whether they do or not, said by their fruit, you should know them. And whatever you see on that tree, whatever you see being manifested, is exactly who they are. You said, judge not, but guess what? You judge people by their fruit. You practice being a physician, family practitioner. You're not a dentist, are you?
No, I don't take out any teeth. I don't like
teeth. So my point is that you have to, it's you know people by what they practice, what is consistent. And if you consistently do the same thing over and over and expecting different results, we're in trouble. We need a new mandate for this country by younger, innovative leaders. And not that the people there can't do a good job or change. They have to show that. They have to show that.
Thank you, caller. Great comments.
We're basically
out of time.
Thank you.
But you made some really great points. And I don't think that they're going to change. I think anyone who goes through the machinery of that is going to be problematic. And we need something completely different. We need a complete change. I always say that the Bay Street Boys or whoever, we got rid of them. So we need something new. We need to bring back the youthful innovation of a new developing country in a different way and style. And so lots to think about. It starts with us. The change starts with us. And we have to demand what we want and what is better for us. So looking at the character of the persons that lead is going to be extremely important We are on a precipice of change. And I want to thank you guys for listening in tonight on The Doctor's Inn with me, Dr. D. Archer. We went a little bit, you know, into our social aspect, but I think it's extremely important because healthcare, education, all of these things reflected by the type of governance that we have and the leadership that we have. And so for a better Bahamas, I hope to see you guys next week, Tuesday, on The Doctor's Inn with me, Dr. D. Archer. Good night.